South Africans doing great things.
Lisa Marie is her name. She's founder of a special needs school called Milkwood Learning Academy. And she's a South African doing great things. She joins me now. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. It's from a thundery Gordon's Bay.
Thundery Gordon's
yes.
Bay. Tell me yeah. about Milkwood Learning Academy and your journey in the founding of the school, Lisa.
So I started 7 years back. I was in mainstream schooling and I had an autistic learner in my class. And at that stage, he wasn't diagnosed with autism. So I walked the journey with the parents and the psychiatrist. And then at the end of that year, I started with him just tutoring. And then from there on, it grew up to where we are now. We've got 20 learners at the moment, and they're all different special needs, mostly autism and one Down syndrome and lots of ADHD children. And most of my students couldn't find place in a mainstream school, or they couldn't find place in a special needs school. And the demand is so huge in this area because of the shortage of special needs schools.
When you say you were in mainstream education, you were a teacher?
Yes, that's right. Yes, I taught grade one.
Yeah.
And so there was this autistic learner that was not diagnosed at that stage, but I walked the journey with his parents and saw the incredible hardship it is for parents yeah. to have an undiagnosed child that needs the attention.
Tell me about practically what that meant. I mean, you were in a mainstream, was it a government school?
A private school.
Private school. Oh, even yes. a private school, right? So it was a private school. There was a child with autism. What was the experience? What did you first encounter as a red flag? Something's going on here that needs real attention.
At that stage, he was undiagnosed. At myself, with the teaching, I was not sure how to deal with the learner that had autism. He was very aggressive. He pulled the posters down in my class, and he had lots of meltdowns. So it was literally to have a team of a psychiatrist and a psychologist that knew that what was going on. So we had to put out an individualized learning plan for him. We had to help him to cope with emotions that he couldn't regulate at that stage. So it was very in the beginning of his journey with autism that I started with him. And then from there on, end of that year, I started with him in a small little room, a braai room, where we started so we knew what was wrong at that stage, so we could start working with him and put his emotions in place and knew what his strong points and weak points and what was the triggers for the meltdowns that he had.
Were his parents aware of his condition?
They, in the beginning we thought it was ADHD, and then later on they knew that there was more to this huge problem that we had. It was difficult for the parents as well, but with the help of all the people and the right people, we could make the diagnosis and we could help him from there on.
So the reason why I ask that question is because if parents are aware that a child has got autism, they are probably not going to apply for that child to go to a mainstream school, especially if it's that school is not a special needs school. So I'm wondering whether that was a function of the shortage of special schools or a function of the parents perhaps not being yes. aware and educated enough to understand the realities of autism
yes.
or both.
Yes, I think it's more than at that stage your mom really didn't know that it was autism, and also didn't have the knowledge of what was really, really going on. And I think also some parents is so in denial and really don't want something to be wrong with their child. and just to blossom and flourish in the mainstream or in a private school at that stage. But later on, when we start walking the path and we could clear out all the problems and the meltdowns, I think the mom started to realize that mainstream class is not the class for her son.
Why did you walk this journey with this particular child? I mean, you had other children. How big was your class?
24 learners.
You had 23 other learners that would have benefited from greater attention from you. I can imagine that it would have taken a lot out of you just by way of energy and emotions and just patience. I imagine it was not easy work. Why did you do it? Did you get paid a little bit more?
No, I didn't. At that stage, it was quite an interesting journey to walk the road with a psychiatrist and a psychologist and just to figure out what is wrong. And autism is so interesting to see how different autism at that stage, how autism can actually be helped or figured out. And if you have the right medication and you have the right support, then you can actually help a learner like that. And I think at that stage, it was just so interesting that I couldn't stop. And I started with the learner. And then from there on, I just got more autistic learners. And to see the strong points of each one makes every day worth the while. And I will fight this battle until I can... I don't think I will ever stop doing this.
So one of the things that I am curious about whenever I speak to South Africans doing great things on this particular slot is that it's usually people that do some of the most sacrificial stuff for what appears to be nothing, okay? I had a conversation, Lisa, with somebody who went to such great lengths to go and fetch people that were stuck in some Scandinavian countries during the lockdown.
Sure.
This guy is a South African pilot. I mean, that story just gives me goosebumps. And I had that conversation during that time, during that COVID moment. But this guy is a South African pilot, has friends in Zimbabwe from the Zimbabwean Airlines, asks them to please borrow him a jet so that he can fly to Switzerland and fetch people that were stuck, Southern Africans that were stuck in Switzerland, I think, to fly back to South Africa and Zimbabwe. And he did it. He did it. You know, I think he got something like 300-400 people back home. And I'm thinking he had his own family. It was a very difficult time at the time. People were afraid that people were dying. And here's this guy swimming against the tide, as it were. Goes and finds these people and brings them back. Another doctor, another person that I was interviewing on this very same slot, would go out and find people that had certain ailments and illnesses from using his own money.
Yeah.
And he would help those people. There was another mom, I think in Khayelitsha, who had two of her own children but was running a soup kitchen that she financed herself. She was unemployed, but she financed herself because she do menial jobs and so forth, and go and speak to various companies and neighboring farms and plots in her area, and then put together food that she would then create a soup kitchen for people in the place where she lives. And she was feeding up to about 1,000 people a day, right?
Yeah.
I watched this and I'm asking you why. And I'm not asking you why because I want you to stop. I'm asking you why, because every single thing about your sacrifice is almost irrational. You've got 23 other kids that you could be giving. You've got your own personal responsibilities. Why would you go into such an emotionally and intellectually and physically taxing journey? Why would you do it? And I'm not asking you because I want you to stop. I'm just deeply curious. Why?
Because I think every little thing that you get right at the end of the day that gives you the most satisfaction that anything can give, that, you know, not even a piece of chocolate or a good glass of wine can give you that feeling that you have.
Chocolate and wine have their place, Lisa. Yeah, no, we could have this conversation. I hear.
That is what I love, what I do. I will do it every day, and I will fight the battle for children, especially the children that we work with, whose parents, middle to low income parents, that doesn't have the money for top of the range special needs schools, and the children that we have gives us thanks in small little ways that is so meaningful and so powerful.
Tell me about that.
So at the moment we've got 20 learners, and each one of them, I think if one of them is not there during the day, it's like a little puzzle piece that's missing, because each one of them brings the joy to the group also, with different diagnoses and different issues and different everythings. They bring the group together.
One of the things... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and that what I wanted to say is it's truly magical if you enter the place where we are. We can feel you can feel the love, and you can feel the... Yes, I did it right, and yes, I can do that now.
One of the reasons why I was so moved by the story as we were looking at the various stories that we wanted to talk about tonight was the fact that your school, Milkwood Learning Academy, and we'll talk about how it started because we hadn't gone into that space, but your school reaches out to children from various communities in the Gordons Bay area, black children, colored children, white children, Indian children, that have been afflicted by the various conditions, autism and Down syndrome and ADHD and so forth. I could see just from the footage and the information that you were giving me that these kids had been receiving a level of care and love that went beyond the professional, if that makes any sense?
Yes, it does.
That went beyond the professional. I could just see the way that the interaction was taking place, and I thought to myself, we need to tell this story. But but tell me about how you transitioned from the school that you were working at to start Milkwood Learning Academy.
So it was a very informal decision. I resigned at the school, and then I started with this boy that I told the journey about now, with four others out of a bride room. And you know how big is a bride room?
What is a bride room? What does that mean?
It's a place for your bride.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I started there, and then and it just got too small, so... Then I got a Wendy house where I taught, and now we're renting a house. So all the growth in the last 7 years, it's also a journey. It was from a bride room to a Wendy to a proper house with three closets now, and we've got a kitchen and a outdoor play area. So the whole journey is just a growth. There is negative things, and there is hardship, and there is failure. But at the end of the day, we're fighting for children that wants to come to school and that embraces the yes and the love and the attention that they get every day. I think I will walk it again.
When you resigned, I imagine the income, the salary that you were getting from being employed at that private school stopped.
Yes, it did stop. I get a small salary now. I do lots of other things also. I've got a toy library that I'm running. That's also a part of the school. So parents and caregivers can come and rent our toys. Also, Gordon's Bay community.
Yeah.
So I started that, and I started to give classes on special needs in in the Ballarat community.
So the reason why I mentioned the fact that when you decided to resign to follow this passion of yours, I imagine that your creditors and the people that you know, the bills, and maybe even your family. I don't know if you're married. Are you married?
No, not.
Or in a committed relationship. Anyway, but it doesn't really matter. The point is still this. I imagine that it couldn't have been very easy to simply resign. Right? I mean, you've got certain financial commitments that you look after because you have a job and you have some sort of a salary. I imagine that decision to resign to go and look after this child in a briar room might not have been popular with some of your creditors, with some of your family members that depended on the fact that you had a salary.
Yeah, no, it was a hard choice to make, but luckily I've got a very good partner that also bought in this idea of starting a special need class out of my bride room. So yeah.
So you had the backup, the structure that was helping you to make this decision.
Yes, yeah. I had 80% structure in the in the whole
So you start teaching and assisting this child. Yes. Who was dealing with autism.
Yes.
I doubt that many of us understand what that takes. I doubt that from a practical point of view, from an emotional point of view, from a patient's point of view, from a management of one's own emotions, in the assistance of a child that hasn't yet learned how to manage their own emotions under the best of conditions, but now even under the conditions of autism. Give us a sense of what you had to go through on a daily basis with that one child.
So there was lots of kicking and biting and aggressive behavior in the beginning, ripping off posters from the walls, running around, and just didn't know how to regulate himself, didn't know when to stop, screaming, and it was quite, it was emotional, and also for the other learners. But I must say, in the beginning, in the middle of that year, he started to We got the plan together, and there was lots of growth also towards the middle of that year.
It appears that the professionals, the psychiatrist, the psychologist, and I imagine sociologists just the professionals that you were working with, were able to give you a plan, a process that you had to follow as the child's development got better and better.
Yes. Yeah. So I must also say that not all plans work immediately.
Yeah.
Every child that we work with got lots of different issues. So the psychiatrist can recommend something, but there might be a chance that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
That was also a thing. We literally had to think what was suitable for this child and what worked and what doesn't work. And after 7 years of doing this, I must say some days we still don't know what works and what doesn't work. So there's also lots of training and lots of reading up and lots of research that's involved in a school like this.
I always admire teachers. Teachers and caregivers, people that look after children, especially, you know, the fact that, you know, these are children. They are still figuring themselves out. They are not always going to follow the rules. They are, you know. It also says to me that it's somebody that has learned how to manage their own emotions, their own internal sort of realities. Like, let me tell you, I don't think I'd be able to do that kind of work, because I'd probably run out of there kicking and screaming. That is something that you must have learned from your upbringing. Where did you grow up, Lisa? What was it that helped you learn how to be such a patient and compassionate person?
So I grew up in Durbanville. I was in Stellenberg High, quite a big high school. But I was in a primary, obviously in grade one in a primary school, and I was one of those learners that struggled with maths, that didn't like maths. And I think with the teachers at that stage of my life, they didn't know really how to help me. And they didn't have the time, because the classes at that stage was already so big. And I think I got the patience from there, because I knew that when I'm grown up, from the word get go, I wanted to be a teacher. So I think I got the patience from there. And now where I'm standing in my career, in my class, in my school, I remember those days where the teachers were not always so patient.
Yeah.
Patient. And, I think I got it from there.
Are you a religious person?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
How much does your faith play in the way that, in the reason why you do what you do, and how you do it on a daily basis?
Oh, every day. We go on our knees in this profession very often. I think I pray throughout the day.
What do you ask for when you pray?
Patience and not giving up, and to have the joy of what I'm doing every day. Because sometimes you do get tired, and sometimes you do want to give up, but... you can't in front of the clients that I have.
Do you get answers? Do you get answers when you pray?
Sometimes, sometimes not. Sometimes I must wait. Sometimes later. Sometimes the time is not right now, but sometimes later in the week or later in the month, you do get an answer in ways that's different that you wanted the answer to be.
One of the hallmarks of South Africans doing great things, particularly in this slot, is that they all have a relationship with a higher power. They all have a deep faith, one way or the other. They all seem to be connected with a reality that transcends their circumstances. And I find often that they are almost in communication. I suppose prayer is a communication. But they are almost in communication with that higher power through their faith. And that relationship is real. It's not just a mind relationship. It's not just a philosophical relationship. It's a real relationship with that deity or that being or that idea. But like, it's a real, real relationship. Do you find that that's the case with you?
Yes, definitely. You must have it when you do work like what we do. You need that.
Do you think you can do the work that you do without that, the faith?
No, no, definitely not.
See, again, that is the typical answer that I get. Whenever I ask a question of that nature to South Africans doing great things, they all say to me categorically, they don't even have to think about it. They don't even think about it. They say, no, you can't do what we do if you don't have this relationship with God, whatever, you know. And so it makes me want to ask the question that says, did you choose this?
I don't think I chose. That's a difficult question. I don't think I chose it. I think it just landed on my lap, since 7 years back when I started in mainstream, and I resigned in a day's time to start with one learner out of my bride room. And 7 years on the down the line, I've got 20 now, and it's lots of faith and it's lots of praying. It's lots of hard work, but at the end of the day, you need faith. You need that. You need it to carry on. You need people that loves and cares about you and think of the school and take hands with you.
Somebody said to me once that God doesn't call the qualified; He qualifies the called. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just sounds like this is just another very important case of that reality, that God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called. Anyway, and so Milkwood Learning Academy starts when?
So we're back on the 3rd of April. After the holiday?
No. In the process, in the journey, when does the school start? When does the decision that, okay, I've resigned and I've got this child that I'm looking after now and helping, but I'm actually going to start a school? When does Milkwood Learning Academy start?
It started in December, 7 years back, after December holiday.
After the holiday it starts, or in December during the holidays, I imagine it would be school holidays at that time.
Yes, correct.
And did you know that this is going to be a school? This is going to be a, you know, the name Milkwood Learning Academy. Where does that come from?
So there was a big milkwood tree where we sat and read during literacy. So there was a big milkwood tree, and Gordon's Bay is quite known for milkwood trees. So yeah, so that's where the name came from. Yeah, it's also a big milkwood tree on our logo with a child hanging on a swing. Yeah.
And so the school started.
Yes, and then from there, so now it's where we are now.
And tell me about how you start to enroll other children, and what is the criteria for accepting them at the school?
So in Gordon's Bay, there's only two special need schools, really. There's, government funding now, government schools. So the waiting lists are insanely long. So lots of our special needs children must literally sit at home and wait for place. And as you know, working parents cannot just sit at home and wait for a phone call from a school saying, listen, you can bring your child to school now. So in the first 3 years of Milkwood, I had a few normal learners that just didn't find place in a mainstream school. And then as I went along, it just went more special needs, more autism, more ADHD, more ADD. So in this year, 2024, I have 99.9% special needs. So it's literally all kind of special needs children that's on the waiting list. For special needs, some of them are on the waiting list. Some of them are in my school because I cater for what they need. And that's what we're doing. And So some of them wants to go to a government special needs school, and some of them prefer the smaller school, what I can give them. So we started with robotics this year, which is quite a big thing for autistic children because they are very good at it.
Really? Huh? And
yeah, they can work out coding
better than
us. And they can do a computer very, the learners that I've got, they are very super fantastic on a computer. And so we cater individualized learning areas that the government schools cannot give.
There was a movie many years ago. I don't know if you might remember this or... Many years ago, and the main actors was Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman. What was the name of that movie? Anyway, Dustin Hoffman plays the brother of the very suave, the very debonair, very handsome Tom Cruise. And Dustin Hoffman happens to live with autism. He's an adult.
Yes, I can remember.
But he has the most amazing gift of being able to count cards. It's considered to be legal in the sort of in the gambling fraternity. But he's got this amazing, amazing ability to just figure things out, detail issues. Is that true? I mean, is that what you're referring to when you say that kids can do? Your kids can do things like robotics and coding and all sorts. Is that true of autistic kids?
Yes, I've got one older learner that can do that. He's amazing, and I've got one that can do big multiplication problems out of his head. He just looks you in your eyes. And then he can give you the answer without putting it on paper.
So when are you going to the casino, Lisa?
No, I think parents will like that.
I'm being very, very, very naughty. I'm being very, very. So it is true that kids can, I mean, autistic kids and I suppose adults have a very special knack for fine detail, yeah?
Yes, yeah. And all of them's got a special knack. They all got something special each one of them got something special about them or something different or that's quite amazing.
How many of you are working together as staff to assist the kids?
So we are four, yeah. Four, one of my assistants, she was in my grade R class when I taught also mainstream.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's 17 now and she's started with us this year, which is also very special. Also autism, and she's helping us out with the smaller ones, which is so awesome.
Yeah. Do you get the sense that we have in South Africa not the knowledge, but do you think that we are sensitive enough to the reality of children living with autism, Down syndrome, ADHD? Do you think that there's a strong enough consciousness about that?
I think we lack it. I don't think. I think we still there's still some people out there that's scared of it or.
Yeah, I can imagine there's all sorts of stigma. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, which is very sad because we actually have. We must stand together. And I mean, every special needs person or person with a disability or a strange sort of thing needs to be on this earth. And they've got just as much rights as me and you to be on in South Africa living here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you actually start to know them, then you discover, wow, look what they can do and look how they can change the world in their different ways.
Do you get assistance from government?
No, we don't. We only rely on up to now we only had we only relied on school fees, but definitely in the future we will have to apply for government funding or lotto. As I said, my parents are low to middle income parents. Some of them cannot afford my school fees, which is not really much. So we will definitely have to look at other ways to get income.
Margaret Urban or Stephanie Nkulani says the film is called Rain Man. Yes.
It's called Rain Man.
I reread the book a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, I remember watching that many years ago. I think I was in my matric year, or maybe just then a nine. And what a movie. I remember I was so moved by it. For a long time, I was thinking about it, Rain Man. They've got like this very catchy song that is in that song. So where do you find yourselves as Milkwood Learning Academy at this point? I mean, I am aware that there are some difficulties, that there is the possibility of the closure of the school and so forth. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so we struggle due to finance. But yeah, so we started the Back a Buddy campaign. I think it's on 17,000 rand now. And we got a donation from a Belgian company. So yeah, so
what sort of expenses are you faced with every month? At give me a figure. I mean, you don't have to give me an exact figure, but I'm just trying to get a sense. How much does it cost to run Milkwood Learning Academy, and what would be the figure that would get it out of trouble in the short term?
So to run it successfully every month without holding my breath is about 50,000 rand. Mm. At the moment, we're getting 40,000 rand in, so there's a shortfall of 10,000 rand each month,
mm-hmm.
Which we try and
find some way.
We try and find it somewhere, or try to cut costs, or with to have a successful month, it's about 50,000 rand a month. Which the biggest part is the staff,
yeah,
and the second biggest is our rent,
yeah,
and then all the little things,
and of course. You don't have a dedicated fundraising sort of team for that, right?
No, we don't. No, we don't. No, that's Lisa.
That's Lisa Maria, the founder of a special needs school called Milkwood Learning Academy.
Yes,
how's that been going, Lisa? How's that initiative of being both the principal of Milkwood Learning Academy, but I suppose the chief fundraiser, how's it going for you?
I think that needs to change. because I teach and I'm the head and I do the funds, yeah. So I'm quite burnt out. I can feel I need a good break or a good donation. I've got four wonderful students of Norway now that's trying to change the business, the whole business, and to see how we can get more income. But that will also, that will be in the long run. It won't be immediate.
If the school closes, what is the reality that is not going to only be faced by the people that you employ, but the children? Give me the real story of if the school closes, what happens?
So we will have 20 learners in the Helderberg without a school. and it will be 20 special needs children without a school. And I think that will be terrible, because, where will they go? They will have to go on a waiting list for a year or 2 years, and then they will probably have to be at home until they can find a place to be enrolled in.
What sort of progress do you make? I mean, give me a sense of what sort of progress you make just academically and other ways for the child, for the children. What do they learn? What do they achieve? What do they get to learn and understand?
So we do we get all of them to read, basic reading skills, and they do maths, which they do very well in. And then we do an emotional program with them so that they can fit in the outside world. And we do lots of therapy and art sessions. So we do lots of therapy with our subjects. And I'm a big believer in play-based learning. So we also do lots of play activities and games. And I must say that helps with the anxiety level also. We don't do as much worksheets like in a normal school.
Sure.
So the anxiety level is not as high versus the take out your workbook, do your work, get it done. And that is a big plus for us. We do it a bit different.
I mean, you guys aren't a mainstream school, mainstream academic school. So I can understand that there'd be different things that happen there.
Yes, yeah.
What sort of assistance do you get from the parents?
Yes, that's a different interview for another day. Mm. We've got working parents. So our parent involvement is very, very little. But I see with other schools also, parents just doesn't have the time anymore to sit with a child in the afternoons. They want to go home, do the cooking or the baking, and then get the child in bed, and then the next day it's the same pattern. And I see it with all schools. Parents just doesn't have the time anymore, which is so sad.
I tell you, I've got a little boy in grade 2 now and a little girl in grade 5. It's the amount of work, Lisa, just the amount of work. I think we as a country need to have a conversation about are we not stealing the very precious moment of childhood from these children? It's just it's just an avalanche of work. I mean, there's 6 subjects and each of them will have homework for each subject after a full day of school and sport, it's a conversation that I'd like to have perhaps going forward. It just feels to me like the poor kids don't get a chance to be kids anymore. There's sport, there's extramural activities, then there's homework that lost the whole, and that's for kids in mainstream schools. I imagine that with you and the challenges that you have to face, it becomes doubly difficult. I can hear the burnout. I can hear the difficulties. I imagine it's a very difficult situation.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I think there's also a lot of training needs to be done around parents. Which is also a big conversation. Parents need to buy in the idea of having a child.
Absolutely. Let me ask you. You said you've got a crowdfunding back a buddy sort of situation. If there are listeners, and I'm getting a lot of people saying, "How do we help Lisa keep the school running? How do we do that?"
So they can go on the back a buddy crowdfunding homepage. We are on there as Save Milkwood. I think it's the 4th picture from the top. Or they can phone me on 076 140 3437, or they can email me at marais1nine@gmail.com.
Lisa Marais, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, and as I stand up to salute you, keep going, don't stop.
Thank you so much.
Please, please keep tapping into that faith of yours. That's what's brought you this far. It will not disappoint you. And I'm hoping that our listeners will find it in their hearts to help you. Give me that number again.
076-140-3437.
Lisa Marais, founder of a special needs school called Milkwood Learning Academy, and a South African doing great things. Have yourself a great weekend.
Thank you. Come and visit us someday.
We will. We'd
love to meet you.
Thank you so much, Lisa Marais.